This is Bernd Strom, the Strommer from SoccerSpecific.com. We'd like to welcome today Dana Taylor, head soccer coach at Oregon State University, to the Boot Room. Welcome, Dana.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. I would love to hear journey to Oregon State and all the places in between that led to this place today.
It's been a long journey, Bert. I started off actually under Timmy Schultz with the Rush Soccer Club out in Colorado. And many people know now that the Rush Soccer Club is Rush, Virginia, Rush, Houston. They're starting clubs all across the country. So I was fortunate enough, actually, to work under Timmy and develop his club on the recreation side. So my job really was U10s, and I worked with developing that group and then developing the U11 competitive scheme for them, as well as coaching in the upper competitive division for them. So I learned under Timmy, who's been in the NASL, a great man, taught me a whole lot, and then he kind of said, it's time to move on. And so I took the Chargers Soccer Club down in Colorado Springs, was there for 2.5 years. While I was there, I was also the assistant coach at Colorado College. Worked with a women's program that the goalkeepers that actually went into the Final Four. And then also worked with the men's program, and we went to a Final Four championship with them that year in 92. From there, actually, I went into the state director role and oversaw the entire state of Nebraska, all 25,000 youth players, 1,800 coaches, developed an ODP program for the state, developed a licensing program for the state, and while I was there, I was fortunate enough to have Brett Simon and Bob Warming on my staff. And so at that point in time, I got to know them. Well, one thing led to another, and Bob said, hey, you're a goalkeeping specialist. Why don't you come on board as a volunteer? So I worked with them in 93 when they were 19-0-0.
Now, where is that at?
That's Omaha, Nebraska.
But what school?
Creighton University.
There you go. Okay.
Yes. And so anyways, I was out there and working with many of their goalkeepers. One thing led to another. When Bob moved on to go to Furman University, he asked me, would you like, Brett Simon now, asked me, would you like to be the assistant coach there? And I said, oh, by all means. So I jumped on board Division I, and you know the success that Creighton has had. It's out of this world. Second winningest program in the 1990s. They've never missed an NCAA tournament appearance since the inception of the program.
Huh.
So, incredible person to learn under. And I was there with Brett for 5 years, till finally Brett kicked me out and said, okay, it's time for you to get a head coaching job. And I was fortunate enough to land the job at Oregon State and have had just an incredible time here working at Oregon State.
Huh. Well, let's jump all the way back prior to even coaching. You played. You played some. And what, as a kid, kind of, what kind of turned you on to soccer?
Well, to be quite honest with you, I just, very few people played when I was growing up. I mean, I hate to give you my age, but I'm actually 42. So I was kind of the inception of that new era of players coming and playing the game. So it was exciting. It was grassroots, but I had a passion for the game. I can't explain it. I just had a passion for the game that I could not put it down. So through a couple of great coaches, one being Bob Gustafson, who's at John Brown University. He was my next door neighbor. He was one of the of only two A-licensed coaches in New England at the time.
Huh.
And he taught me. As well as the other guy was Ed Bradley, University of Rhode Island head coach, was my high school coach.
Huh.
And my club coach. So I had some great guys teaching me the game. I was fortunate enough and unfortunate that my sophomore year of high school, I broke my leg, compound fracture, and forced me in and out of the goal because I was a goalkeeper and a field player. And so for 3 or 4 years, I kind of refined my skills again back on the field. And, you know, as a college player, I made All-New England my junior year as a sweeper. And in my senior year, I made All-New England as a goalkeeper.
Huh.
So the problem was, in 1985, when I graduated, it was demise of the NASL.
Right.
So there was no professional soccer when I came out. All the professional soccer players that wanted to stay in the United States then turned around and played in the indoor league.
Right.
And there was no way a college player at that point in time was really going to make a living, because you had all these other pros that were playing in the NASL jump down. So I stopped playing and kind of went on my career.
Huh. So you got out to Colorado and forged this new kind of coaching thing. Did you think coming out of college that you would be a coach? I mean, was that something that just sort of kind of was part of your DNA? I mean, is it something that Dana Taylor just cannot not do?
Well, I was working for a Fortune 500 company. My wife owned her own jewelry store. You know, had the cars, had the house, everything's going fine, the kids, the dog, etc. And next thing you know, my wife said, "You just don't look happy.
Huh.
What's going on?" And I said, "You know what? I got to do something different." So she said, "Well, what makes you happy?" And I said, "The happiest I've ever been is when I was in soccer. And I did a lot of coaching. At age 16, I had my F license. So I had a taste of that. I had a taste of a great coach as a youth, and some bad coaches along the way, and some even better coaches. So I said, I want to coach. So I did that for free, then took over a high school team, worked my way through the system, met Timmy Schultz, and the rest is history.
Hmm. Well, speaking of history, you have a great time with Brett Simons out at out of Creighton, and Brett says, "Time for you to grow up and do your own thing. You've been riding my coattails for long enough. Let's see what you can do." So Oregon State University gives a call out in the middle of kind of nowhere, not really on the soccer map by most people's opinions, and yet you say, "I'm up for it. I'm going to start something there that's going to build into something something worthwhile." So how did that come about? You got here. How did you build a program?
Well, I mean, before you even get there, you have to look at certain things, and that is, in order to build a great program, you must have the administration. There are certain keys to ever stepping in and building a program. If you don't have the administration's backing, it's not going to happen, no matter how hard you try and make it happen as a head coach. So when I was in the interview process, everything that you know, was shaping up took place when I got here, which is paramount. So from there is what I wanted. I wanted the challenge. I knew that if I stayed at Creighton over a period of time, that I'd probably be up for the head coaching job as Brett moved on, because, you know, his services were such that, I mean, he's one of the best coaches in the college game. So I wanted, though, to go and build a program and put my own stamp on the game. And so what I did was I moved to Oregon, a great place to live, and administration was awesome. They gave me all the tools to get it done, and I had the blueprint, and I think that's the key. You know, you have a lot of coaches out there that are great coaches that have not seen it. And you kind of flounder around for a while as a head coach, finding your own niche. But those coaches that have worked under great coaches and have seen the blueprint for success, and there are many things that the coach needs to see in order to have the blueprint for success. I mean, for instance, I mean, it's real simple. Why has Jesse Cormier gone on to Vermont? Why has Steve Simmons gone on to Northern Illinois? Is it that I'm such a great coach? No way. What is it? I've seen the blueprint. I've put the blueprint into work here at Oregon State. They've seen how it works, and now they're getting it done where they're going.
So it's not, this blueprint's not a secret, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a secret?
It's a secret.
Come on, you can share a little. Because you said you have to have great administrative background. So you have the administration behind you, so you have that. What does it take?
Do you think I'm crazy? I know people are going to be listening to this interview.
Sure. Everybody's going to Soccer Boot. SoccerSpecific.com in the boot room.
Right. I can share a little bit, actually.
All right.
The things that are really important, obviously, as a coach, you have to have the eye for talent.
What are you looking for?
I'm looking for players with speed, players that don't give the ball away much. You know, the game is a game where roughly possession turns over somewhere between 182 times in the course of a game to 300 times. So to say someone's brilliant on the ball, he's still going to give it away. So possession is key. But you have to have the players that not only have the ability to possess the ball, to beat a person on the dribble, those kind of things, technical things. You got to have a player that has a good football mentality, understands the game. But you need players that have pace. Without pace, the other things don't happen. In other words, I could take any Tom, Dick, and Harry and put him on XYZ player if he's athletic enough. Yeah, the guy may faint and juke him and do all those things, but that player's not getting by that player, my player, because he's got the pace to control the guy. Now you throw pace, skill onto that. And it's a fine line, because what we're trying to do is, you know, many times those guys are the guys that are going Project 40, the top players in the country. And so you have to find diamonds in the rough, guys that you think have not reached their athletic potential, guys that are just coming into form. Because in this, you know, great coaching society that we have, some of the players that are on the regional teams and the national teams are players that are now starting to come down. They've reached their athletic potential. Other players are growing past them, both physically, technically, etc. And it's a fine line to see those players. You know, for instance, like when I was at Creighton, I was down at Dallas Cup, and I saw Brian Mullen. Now, we all know who Brian Mullen is. San Jose Earthquakes and U.S. national team. Well, the first game I ever saw Brian, first of all, you know, on his resume and things, he was playing for the under-15 national team in hockey, ice hockey. He was not on any radar screen. He was not on a regional team. But the kid is quick, fast, mobile, and technical enough. And over his 4 years, he continued to grow, and look where he is now. So you've got to be able to see those kind of players as a coach. I would say that's part of the blueprint. Administration, there are certain key things that I'm not going to share, but administratively, if you think you coach here, you're mistaken. Coaching is 20-25% of what you do. Administrative is a large chunk, maybe 50% of what you do. You have to be able to have the ability to go out and fundraise. You have to be able to go in front of people and sell your school. You have to be able to sell your program to your recruits. And if you can't do that, you're not getting those players. There are other things to the blueprint, but those are just a few.
And those are good. I take those to the bank. Those are nice. Speaking of coaching, earlier you talked about that you learned through the process of licensing and through both good coaching and bad coaching. What makes for good coaching, and what were some of the distinctives of bad coaching? Things that you saw that you go, I'm not going to do that for sure, that kind of a thing.
I think the one thing that drew me to Eddie Bradley and to Bob Gustafson is, first of all, they were personable. They really got involved with my life, and they cared. And to have that kind of a person influence you at a young age, was part of what I think drew me back to the game of soccer and coaching. Because later on, you know, I would show up for preseason and goals weren't up, the grass wasn't cut, the balls weren't rolled out, and all we did was run for the solid week. And anybody that knows, playing soccer is about ball touches and you know, the passion. And you don't get the passion just by running laps around the field. And so I saw, you know, maybe not bad, but I saw how to do it right. Okay? And that's kind of what I focused on. And then, you know, developing from there to work with the likes of Brett Simon, Bob Warming, Timmy Schultz. I mean, Timmy Schultz has gotten it done as an NASL player, Defender of the Year. He played for the Aztecs. He played for everybody. And, you know, to learn underneath him, he's a hard coach, hard mentality. Get into your tackles. You know, I've taken bits and pieces. Working with the national staff, when I was a state director, I haven't been able to do it now, but as a state director, I was working as... doing the national C courses. I worked with Bob Gansler and Timmy Carter and Jay Hoffman and Glenn Myernick, some of the top minds in the game. And just to see their sessions, view their sessions, pick their brains. I mean, all those things are important, and those things draw you back.
So as you have developed as a coach yourself, you've picked up on different... you put yourself in a position where you were continually influenced by good minds in the soccer community. And so if there's people who were coming along and were to watch Dana Taylor coach, what are some things people would pick up from you? You know, if I was interviewing them, they'd say, well, Dana Taylor taught me this. What is it that you kind of bring to coaching that might be a little bit unique or would be a distinctive that others would be able to pick up?
Well, this is part of the blueprint, to be quite honest with you. But I think we model our program around what the European clubs are doing. Short story, real quick. I'd been here 3 years. I had just hired Jesse Cormier and Steve Simmons as my assistant coaches. And I'm sitting there in the football stadium at training. And I'm looking up and I'm saying to myself, you know, football has it right. Head coach is down there. He's got his assistants upstairs, defensive coordinators, special teams, all these specialists. And they actually, out of all the American sports, model the game closer to the Europeans, football. Because they have all these specialists. Because over in Europe, you know, the manager doesn't do the training. It's the trainer. So I went to my AD and I said, this is my goal. I want to spend time every day, a lot of time, about an hour, preparing every training session. I want to drop back out, have my two assistants do functional training. I will view the players. I'm going to be looking at the psyche of how they're playing. You know, what they're looking like. Are they connected in the exercises? What's going on? Because you know what, Barrett? Anybody can lay out cones and get the guys going. Anybody. But what you need to do is when you're in the middle of your exercises, you cannot see everything that's going around you, even if you're in the proper position. Because you're thinking about what you're going to be saying next. You're looking at different things. So by removing yourself, you can see so much more of what's going on in the practice field. And the problem is, a lot of head coaches have difficulty doing that because either they don't have the assistant coach that can get it done, or they feel like they have to control the exercises. But the minute I back myself out of the exercises and started having, you know, our starting defense work against our second team offense with my assistant on one end and in my starting forwards and midfielders against my second team midfielders and backs, we started going places with this program. And that is been one of the most significant changes. And, you know, as the exercise goes on, then I see something that I don't like. I get in. I say my piece. I get back out. And now the players have a much better response to me stepping in instead of just constantly hearing me bark orders. So when I get in and say something, it changes. And then the final thing is at the end of the final picture of what we do is then I get in and train the full team in the 8v8, 11v11. My two assistants back off and they get a better idea of what players are looking like in the finish process.
In that model, it sounds a lot like there's a great deal of ownership and also responsibility that you place on your assistants, as well as it transfers then onto the student athlete, the player, who then says, I need to get this done. It's not just coming down to the head coach making decisions for me. I hear it. I need to actually execute it. If I don't, then there's some issue there, obviously.
Right.
Which is a great thing. Hey, when you're looking for players, you talked about speed, those kinds of things, technically good on the ball. Flip that around. What are players looking at you in different ways? I mean, as they think about you, what do players say about you? You know, and you've had some great players come through programs that you've been a part of. Most recently, Alan Gordon, who's now at the LA Galaxy. I talked to Alan not too long ago, and he had great things to say about you. What do you think Alan said about you?
I don't know. Actually, what would I hope they're saying?
Sure.
I'm hard on them, demanding on them, their time, their energy. I'm a stickler for technical repetitions. We make sure that each player feels like he's a part of a family, not a team. The difference is a family. We really go the extra mile to bring everybody in. And I think it's important that when players leave an organization, that they truly felt like they were a part of a family. It was something special because, as you well know, it's not your high school buddies, it's your college buddies that you're forever connected with, living in the dorms, traveling, doing those things. And so we are a family. I would hope that they say that they had a lot of fun, but we were demanding on them.
Translating that further. So I love the image of family. I love the image of kind of belonging, of saying this was a highlight in my life, and to be able to continue it, to pass that on. College is 4 years. Life is maybe 80. You got kids. What are your kids saying about you?
Hard, demanding, a lot of love. Family type.
Great. Hey, it has been great to be here in the boot room with Dana Taylor, head coach of Oregon State University. Hey, is there anything else you'd like to say just as we close?
No, thank you very much, Barrett.
Good. I am the Strommer, Barrett Strom, and saying goodbye and have a great day.